Good evening, everybody. This is Christopher Buck.
And Leanne Elige.
With Humanity Healing, and we are here this evening to talk about the stellar codes, and in particular, stellar code Fomalhaut, which is the current stellar code that we are working with.
Yes, and like we said before, Fomalhaut is the fourth of star from the basic cross in the sky, representing one of the four towers or the four Maharajas, the four, what do you call the four sacred stars of the Persian people.
These were the royal stars that were the most significant to the civilizations in ancient Persia.
Okay. Starting about Fomalhaut. Fomalhaut actually is a star from a constellation called Pisces Australis. It's the big fish in the sky. But this constellation is kind of mingled with the constellation of Aquarius, which is where, you know, the time, the zodiac time that we are trespassing right now. So this has double significance. The energy of Fomalhaut at the same time is an energy of air, because it is a complementary aspect of the constellation of Aquarius, but is also a element water, because the Pisces Australis, you know, they have different pronunciations. It's what they call the father of the little two Pisces, the symbol of the Pisces constellation. So he's the big fish, and Pisces is the little fish. This is from Ageless Wisdom. So we have a double jam here. You have two aspects. On initiation terms, you will be who is processing or doing the process of the Fomalhaut stellar code will go to a double experience through the trials of fire and to the trials of the trials of air and the trials of water. Those are basic energies that have to be conquered in order for you to have the complete awareness, not only of your world of elements, but what transcends the world of the four elements. So we are completing this task now during the process of attunement and anchoring of the energy of Fomalhaut. Aquarius is, I'm going to now just talk about a little bit about Aquarius. Aquarius is one of the most important constellations nowadays, and there's nothing to do basically with less importance of the signs inside of the zodiac, and I mean this because everybody has, every single sign of the zodiac has his own importance as facets of the same diamond jewel that we all intend to be one day. But the reason Aquarius is so important is because we enter in the age of Aquarius, and the age of Aquarius is the age of liberation of men. Talking a little bit about the zodiac, you have just a few, if you look at the zodiac, and iconography shows and to represent each one of those zodiacs, Aquarius is one that have explicit a human figure. You have this again at when you have the Virgo, which is the Virgin. Then you have this on the Geminis, the two twins. But in Aquarius, you have one person doing a job, because the Virgin itself, she's just contemplating and receiving the energy of fertility, and we went through this when we did the stellar code speaker. So, but when you go back and you think about, there are three elements that represent human figures on the zodiac. One of them is Aquarius. The Aquarius symbol is the water, the divine water, and the symbol is that he pours upon the mouth of the fish, which is Fomalhaut star, is the constellation of Pisces Australis, the water of the flood. Therefore, the destruction of the world, as it is prevented by the action of man, along with the recipient energy of the divine, or the new element of the unconscious, or you can use unconscious if you want to use more like the psychology language, but you can also use the hidden or the what is not seen, the energy of the divinity. So the fish there represents a divine will, and the action of man is absorbed by the divine will and transformed. So there is an interesting myth related to this, saying that the water of the deluge or the water of the flood was poured upon the mouth of the fish through formaldehyde to avoid the destruction of the world. This is absolutely representative for the time that we are living right now as human beings on this earth, the prevention of the further destruction of earth, the creation of a new way to see life and to relate to each other. I wouldn't use the word New World Order because people think that New World Order is evil, but for those people, but we have to understand one thing. The pattern of exploitation and all the evil there are in the world now, it's an old order. There's nothing new about them. So what I'm talking about, the beginning of, I'm not going to use a new world order, but there is something different.
A new mindset.
A new mindset. And this is more, it has been imprinted upon us through the energies that come from Aquarius with the interaction with Formaldehyde. Another thing that's interesting for us to understand is how this is really affecting us. You see what we have been witnessing on the Arab world, what is happening there, is a result of the eclipse that happened in October. And under the succession of eclipse that we had in October, and now the end of the year, and actually end up pressuring more. So I cannot say all the expectations, otherwise it would be very boring, but they culminated with Egypt, now Algeria, and Yemen, and all the other countries there. But this is the energy of Aquarius, of we would not accept oppression, lies, deceit anymore. We want to be sovereign beings. We want to just be and be the best we can be. Well, this is a basic energy. We're not going to allow this our world to be destroyed by the powers of evil.
There's been a lot of talk lately about raising the vibration of consciousness and how we need to do all this, and this is a result of the work of doing that, of raising the collective consciousness of humanity. These are just manifestations, what you're seeing with the what's going on in the Middle East, in Egypt and like right now.
Yes, so the basic stuff about Formaldehyde is that it's the biggest and more brightest star. And if you look at both constellations, Formaldehyde and Pisces Australis and the entire constellation of Aquarius, they're kind of faint stars, but not Formaldehyde. It's a very powerful and intense, bright star.
Well, it's called the Lonely Star because of the relative difference in the magnitude of the stars around it.
So the star was related by the ancient text to the Archangel Gabriel. And why was Archangel Gabriel? Because it's in the mouth of the fish. The mouth of the fish, and the fish in this case could be identified with a series of symbols on diverse religions and cults in the past, as the Vishnu, which was the first incarnation of Christ consciousness. The Lord Vishnu, he was a fish. So you have the mouth of the fish. Archangel Gabriel is officially the responsible for, I would say, the Annunciation Department, but it's much more than that. Enoch tells us that Archangel Gabriel sits near Archangel Metatron. And for those that know Archangel Metatron a little bit more deep about him, the Kabbalah says that he is actually the voice of God. So Metatron, when, again, in a tree of life, you have Keter, you have the three veils of a non-manifested energies or non-manifested, the negative is veils of existence. You have Keter, and the first level beyond, you know, below that is the, I would say, the umbrella of Archangel Metatron. So the will of the Father, Mother, Father, God, pass down to all of them through the energy of Metatron. So as Enoch said, Archangel Gabriel sits on the right hand of Archangel Metatron. Now, Archangel Metatron, through Enochian theology, I would say, refers to him as the scribe. Is the scribe the name? Scribe of God.
Scribe. Yes.
The scribe of God. I want to say escriba in Portuguese. It's scribe of God. So he is the one responsible for the main communication from Mother, Father down to all the realms of existence, all the levels of consciousness. And Archangel Gabriel is right there. So you have him that is like the big boss, and you have Gabriel. But the power of Gabriel is very intense and very much, you know, incredible. Because along with this, studying again Enoch, Enoch talks about Gabriel as being the archangel that preside over all the powerful things. So that gives right there that he is a incredible being, and as functioning as the logoi of the star Formalot, being the mouth of the Pisces, or the mouth of the fish, or the godfish, but one of the representations of the, you know, Mother, Father, the Godhead.
Well, it's an interesting to point out that the mouth of the fish is the star represented by Gabriel, who is, you know, the Gabriel or the Archangel of Annunciation, of messages, of this sort of thing. So it's interesting how they all tie together.
So Gabriel was confined, you know, God confining Gabriel to give messages, direct messages when they are needed, to bring about the existence or the manifestation of Christ consciousness in various levels during the history of mankind and in diverse, you know, religion based and various theological systems. So you have the annunciation of the coming of Christ, of Jesus, to Mary, the Annunciation of Mary. You have him doing the Annunciation of the birth of John the Baptist. You have Gabriel passing the message of the good news to Muhammad, the prophet from Islam. And by the way, they say that Muhammad, you know, tried to resist receiving the message. And what Gabriel did was Gabriel squished him to death. Gabriel just gave him a big hug, kept him very close, and said, "You're going to listen."
You know, Gabriel also is the one that traveled, or took Muhammad, traveled him up to heaven to receive the teachings. And going back to the beginning of everything, Gabriel and Michael were supposedly the witness, or were, our tradition says, were the witnesses at the marriage of Adam and Eve.
Can you imagine that? Oh, wow. So, but anyhow, this is what is said. But Gabriel has also the power of silence. Because you know, it's said on a tradition, and it's in the Bible actually, that when he did the annunciation to the parents of John the Baptist, to be John the Baptist, the father of John did not believe it. And he said, "How can that be? I'm old. My wife is very old. We cannot conceive a son." And Gabriel said to him, "Okay, I am telling you this. And his name will be John. But because you don't believe me, I will silence you. And you will just able to speak after you see the wonders of God being done." And so Gabriel silenced him. It's also said that Gabriel was the one that gave everybody that comes to life, because he's part of the, I would say, department, like I said, the Department of Annunciations and New Birth. So he also gave this little wavy thing in the top of our lips when he puts his finger to us to keep silence or to the vow of silence. And it's one of the most high saying on alchemy, which is the words could be of silver, but silence is gold, is given as a teaching from Gabriel to each one of us at birth. So they say this little waving, you know, upper lips, under a little bit under our nose.
Between the nose and the lips, the impression.
The impression of the finger of Gabriel. But Gabriel has even more incredible power, because Gabriel also is known to be the archangel that bestow upon people the blessings of God. So he is officially the blesser. So through Gabriel, you know, the blessings of initiation, the blessings of good news, the blessing of change, that's just his responsibility. So every time somebody asks for a blessing, you know, directly or indirectly, you are invoking the power of Archangel Gabriel.
And this is one of the energies that we're working with this particular stellar code.
Well, we're going to, you know, for those that already know the stellar code, what we do is to create and attune you to the basic energy of this star and all the universe and all the consoles and all the worlds that are connected with this, start being part of our own, you know, microcosmic system as a human being. So what we're doing with the stellar code basically is that we are attuning you to galactic codes. You know, we are tuning you not only to be a human from Earth, but a galactic human, transcended, released, and ascended.
What Liani is referencing here is something we discussed in the preamble to the tonight's talk, is that there are two basic schools of ascension. There's galactic, and then there's the one here on Earth.
So this is basically the energy of Formalaut. But this is stellar code is not only going to apprehend and integrate the energy of Formalaut. We are integrating the energy of two other stars. They are in the sky at the same time, making a big, interesting conjunction.
Let me briefly explain. One of the things that we work on with the stellar code is we're building our personal antikorana. We're helping you facilitating you as you build your antikorana, which is your pathway back to your soul. Now, each of us comes with the silver cord, the sutrama, which is a connection between your soul and your higher self and your lower self. But what we can do is we can build a cord back, so to speak. This is called antikorana. And whereas the silver cord, or the sutrama, is approximately the diameter of your thumb, the antikorana, when we build it back, is approximately the diameter of your head. And what we do with each of these stellar codes is we typically integrate energies from three different systems or three different codes in together. In this particular case, we're calling them, you know, Formalaut, Pegasus, and Betelgeuse. I keep wanting to call it Betelgeuse, but it's Betelgeuse. And these are the three stars that we're working with that we will be helping to build back the antikorana. So there are technically three codes within the stellar code of Formalaut. We just lump it under this name to make it easy on us.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. What Chris is saying, when you build back the antikorana, is everything is a process of attunement. Even, right, you know, in ancient times, you have attunements they're giving naturally to process of aging. And those are known as rites of passage. So in some civilizations, you have the young boy that becomes a man, and in the Hebrew tradition, he goes to a bar mitzvah, and he becomes a man after this ritual, and he proves that he can read the Torah in Yiddish and everything else. And the ancient American, Indian American tradition, you have the boy that has to go to the wilderness and face his fears. Now,
the spirit quest.
Yeah, the spirit quest. Now, those are rites of passage. Those are attunements. And they basically have to face their fears. When we doing each one of the stellar codes, we are working with one of the facets of our own diamond, our own personality, building and building back the path home, but eliminating what is lower human to transcend and become higher human. So basically, through the stellar codes, you can achieve no longer being a level one human, which I call level one human, is the one that lives only on the mind, the lower mind.
It resides in the ego and basically the lower three chakras.
Yes, but it's the lower mind with all my needs, or my feelings, and, you know, my existence. So this is level one human, where nothing is real, everything is just makeup, and people there nowadays are incapable even to think for themselves and don't even have an opinion. If something happened and a discussion occurs, they need an opinion, so they turn on the TV to hear the talking heads give them an opinion to use. They don't even analyze it, you know, but they accept. So this is what I call level one human. What we want you to do in the process of the stellar code is a transcendence from the level one human to a level two human, which is the earthly, you know, the ascended earthly human, but we're working on the three and the fourth level, which is the systematic human, which is the solar system, and the fourth level, which is the galactic human.
You know, you'll hear the terms for these in different schools, for instance, like becoming self-realized, or, you know, the level one human that Leonard was referred to as being very 3D, and we're working towards being a 5D person. You know, there's a lot of different names and buzzwords out there for essentially a very similar process.
And this is what we're using, trying to use as much as possible and be very, very much connected on what we call ageless wisdom. This is not a talk from New Age. This is not a talk from New Age. This is something that has been with us since forever. So,
you'll see references in the earliest known religious writings, which are called the pyramid texts, to what we're talking about here. For instance, referring to the solar logos or the god Osiris as residing in what is now called Orion. But also, one of my favorite quotes is simply, I am a soul, I am a star of gold. And that comes from the earliest known religious writings that we have in our civilization.
Which is absolutely the acknowledgement of our stellar origin. We are stellar beings, just having human experiences.
So we for people that question or talk about New Age, it's just to put the matter straight, we're really old school. We're not New Age. We're not repackaging old teachings and putting them into something new per se. We're trying to pass along the original teachings in as true a form as possible for this. And this is, you know, this is not something, or these teachings, like the referring to the building back of Antikorana, this is not a concept that's you know, just us. The term Antikorana it goes back a long time in a different, you know, very various traditions. And so it's we're trying to bring this forward and reintroduce some of these things to
practices, because nobody's going to reach enlightenment without a spiritual practice.
Well, that's true. And as we always say, a spiritual practice is just that practice. It's something you have to continually do. You're not going to achieve enlightenment in a weekend course. I really wish you could, because I'd be the first to sign up for it. But
what we're basically doing is we're rebuilding our bodies, and all the manifestations of our bodies. We're building our physical body back again to receive all the higher level energies. We're rebuilding our extra-physical bodies. What we're doing in ageless wisdom terms is rebuilding our temple. We're rebuilding the temple, which is the sacred temple of the Holy Spirit.
Which is you.
It's you. So how can you rebuild block by block? What are those blocks? And where can we arrange them? The blocks are the stellar codes or the stellar attunements, bringing and remembering our stellar memories, our stellar heritage. Now, if you go to the Bible, in a part of the Old Testament, which I really don't like much, but there's an interesting thing there, it is said that King Solomon took 13 years to build his temple. Of course, you can understand this as he took 13 years to build his temple, the outside temple, but at the same time he was building the outside temple, he was also building his inside temple. And it said there also that why he said 13 years, because it was a tradition in Egypt that initiation of the stellar codes, there were ancient traditions, it took 12 years for you to build, you know, and to go to the process of initiation. Of course, the time and the speed of things changed because long, you know, periods of time already passed. A lot of water went down this river, and now we can absorb more and faster. So that's the reason the stellar codes takes 12 months. We're trying to resume all of this, but it's a very, for all of those that already did the stellar code, knows that the process of changing and the process of mutation from that is very intense. The course is very intense energetically, emotionally, because you're going to deal with a lot of things that need to be purified and relieved.
Let me interject here for the people that are listening to this for the first time and haven't heard one of the Stellar Code programs before. The Stellar Code is essentially a year-long program. It's not something that you have to start at one date and continue through for the rest of the year. You can start it at any time. These are all facets of one jewel. They're not sequential. So people can pick up and start at any time and do this. But it's a serious spiritual practice. And to fully assimilate, to learn and assimilate all the different codes takes a year's commitment. And so we're really, you know, when Leanne and I are talking, we're in the process right now of finding, now we're giving codes to multiple people, but we're looking for 72 people that we will pass the teaching of the Stellar Codes onto. And then Leanne and I are retiring from doing this. This was our commitment, was to train 72 people to be master teachers. And then those 72 people will be taking this forward to train others.
Yes, but going back to King Solomon, he built his temple in 13 years. And in the Bible, with all the dimensions and everything else, you can make an inference on the distance of each one of the stars. It's also said by Enoch that... let me finish.
Okay.
That he actually binded some stars. One of them were the Pleiadians, Fermanaut. When you say binded, you can say also, you know, in the old text, in Greek that says assimilated.
Or harness the energy.
Harness the energy. Not that he binded as demons, but as harnessing the energy. And the interesting thing about this, it is also the Bible says that King Solomon built his temple without a noise of a hammer. Now, how can you build such a magnificent temple that was seen without any noise? He had the power of silence, the power of meditation. So he was not only referring at a temple built outside of him. He was talking about the building of the temple inside. and he was known to be one of the most wise kings that ever existed.
It's really amazing how this all ties together. And what I was going to hop in and mention real quickly, Ani, was for the people who don't know who Enoch was. Enoch was, I believe, the great-grandson of Adam, and he's listed in Genesis. But there is a book called the Book of Enoch. It's one of the Apocrypha, or non-canonical religious texts, although it is canonical with the Christian church in Ethiopia. But having said that, there is a religious text based on the writings of one of the figures of the Old Testament whose name was Enoch, and that's when we talk about Enochian tradition, or who Enoch was, that's who we're referring to.
So let's go now back to Formaliot and the other stellar codes. They are referring to this maximum, I would say, codex of Formaliot. So what we're talking about is other constellations that are forming big aspects with formally out in the sky during this period of time from February to March, middle March. And we have the constellation of Pegasus, and we also have the star Betelgeuse. So let's talk a little bit very briefly about Pegasus and Betelgeuse. Pegasus, that is the most fascinating of the stellar codes, because the myth of Pegasus is absolutely transcendent. You know, first of all, like how Pegasus came to be. Pegasus came to be because on the myth of the Perseus was challenged to kill the Medusa to get her head off, Medusa, the Gorgon, to take her head off and to kill another monster.
Now, Medusa was the monster that if you looked at her, you would turn to stone.
So, anyhow, he was challenged with that. Now, he went to kill Medusa, but he said that Medusa once was a beautiful woman. One of the most beautiful women in Greek mythology.
And a priestess of
Athena. What happened to her was that the god Poseidon decided to rape her. And from this rape, she got pregnant. And therefore, she could not, you know, any longer serve as a priestess. The priestess were necessarily had to be vessels or virgins to serve inside of the temple of Athena. So what he did was he violated her, and then she became this monster. Of course, the psychology of Jung talks about Medusa, that she was beautiful and she became a monster because of a rage of her anger.
The internal bitterness is what turned her into
a monster. And to look at her would freeze, you know, because of her transformation was so degrading, it will freeze anybody to be a stone to see how much she left, you know, the anger, the rage, and the shame and the guilt of what happened to her, because she were really not understood. She got kicked out of the temple, and she started living in recluse.
So Perseus ends up lopping off her head as part of this myth.
And as was one of these challenges, Perseus was also a demigod, but to conquer, he's placed back in heaven. That was one of the things he had to do. So he went there to kill it. Now, again, talking about Medusa, Medusa is the symbol of our ego, a symbol of all the lower energies and all the lower facets of our ego, the jealousy, the pride, the
vanity,
the bare needs. I can name forever, but, you know, right now it just gets, you know. But anyhow, she is the symbol of this. When he cuts her head, what comes out of it? What comes out of it is Pegasus.
Yeah, one of the drops of blood that spilled on the ground sprang forth as the flying horse Pegasus, which for anybody who, probably for everybody here, has at some point in time when they were a child or as an adult, you know, fantasized or imagined or thought about Pegasus and being able to fly on Pegasus or where this horse could take you.
So, go back to the matter of it. So, Pegasus, in the psychological and transcendent psychological, I would say esoteric psychology, it would tell you that Pegasus is the strength of the spirit. There is no longer enclosed and imprisoned inside of the grasp of ego. This is one aspect. Now, the second aspect, you know, we can go forever with the, you know, we have on the guide, not in the guidebook, but later on the appendix, you will have all the myths and each one of the elements that we want to work through this attunement, which is on you. You know, which element on you evoke this, that those are the elements that we will work with you to remove in order for you to receive the full attunement. But the interesting thing about Pegasus is that Pegasus is, in his constellation, the star in the shoulder of Pegasus, you know, shoulder and neck, is known to by the name of Merkab. So if Pegasus is the big energy that flies, or the chariot that can lead you to the gods, or the, you know, the realms of God, and his major star name is Merka, it does allude a lot to the chariots of God or Merkaba.
This is one part of the academic theory that's out there, is that the origin of the term Merkaba, the concept of the divine vessel, the flying divine vessel, is all tied to the star Merkab and in the constellation Pegasus. It's one of the studies that has been presented out there. The truth of it, I think, is something that you have to find yourself. Personally, I think this is right on the money.
So, then, you know, Pegasus' name comes from two words. One is Pega, and another one is Ka. Pegasus. That's how the Greek, you know, expelled
before. The original Greek word.
Yes. Pega means Pega, or Pegasus. Pega, Pe means chief. Ka means spirit. And Sus means horse. So it's the horse of spirit, or the chief spirit, or the horse of the, you know, the essence on you. And of course, this energy only can be released if you had conquered the ego. So, to wake Merkaba, and one more time, people ask, oh, how can I awake Merkaba? How can I activate Merkaba? You know, there is no techniques. This is not something that somebody will do with you like those Shaktipa things. This is something that will come naturally with your effort to conquer your ego.
It's probably one of the most frequent questions we get is, how can I activate my Merkaba? And there's different schools out there. One of them has breath techniques, which are next to impossible to do, but it's an artificial form of
activating
Merkaba.
And doesn't work too much and not for too long.
But true Merkaba, to be able to activate and to be able to use it, requires divine assistance. I mean, there's talks about the finger of God touching people, and then they transcend, or they're
able
to do
that. Yeah, but for you to feel the finger of God on you, the higher finger of God, you need to do a lot of cleansing. And this cleansing is all the debris that we accumulate in our lifetime. But let's go back to Pegasus. Pegasus is also one of the stars that once attuned can facilitate a lot you astral traveling. Because understand one thing, when you astral travel, you get out of your body. That's the sensation that you have as a soul extension. But what actually happens is you expand your level of consciousness. And you get out and you can see and you can travel. But the energy of travel is given by Merkaba. Your body is there in that place, and the energy of Merkaba, you know, facilitates the you know,
expansion
the expansion of your consciousness. And you expand your consciousness, you can go. It is not that your soul leaves the body. You know,
because your soul is always connected to your
body. Exactly. And so it leaves your body and goes somewhere else. Ain't gonna happen. So this is one of the aspects of Pegasus. But again, we are getting short on time. Let me go to Beta Gauss. Ooh, this one is another really, really hot star.
Let me say it three times. Betelgeuse.
All right, that's like, it's just silly. Anyhow, Betelgeuse is an incredible, absolutely drop-dead gorgeous star. It's like 600 some years.
Light years away.
But it's a giant. It's a red giant. And scientists and NASA are saying that she is in the end of her lifetime, meaning that she will, you know, explode.
She probably will go supernova. She will go supernova at some point, whether it's in 2012, as some people speculate, or it'll be 10,000 years from now. Only God knows.
Well, the symbol, one of the symbols of the Mayans and one of the biggest, I would say, prophecies around there is that we're going to get a second sun. This is part of the process of ascension of Earth, that we're going to gain a new sun. And Betelgeuse is one of the candidates.
It's a good candidate for it.
It is a very good candidate. If Betelgeuse explodes in the mid of 2012, like they say it will, she will generate such a powerful explosion that she will be seen on daylight. So we're going to have more than a dot in the sky on daylight. So this in itself is absolutely incredible.
To put this in context, think about our sun, but think about our sun so big that it's beyond the orbit of Jupiter. It kind of boggles the mind how big this star is. And if this star rapidly contracts, goes supernova, what an incredible astronomical event.
Well, in our lifetime, you know, we never had anybody, I mean, of those higher beings going supernova on us. So it's a really interesting thing. But going back to Betelgeuse, for those, I have to just make an addendum here. I know that, you know, this may be annoying for certain people that we cite old texts and we cite the Bible a lot, because a lot of people think that the Bible was just ripped apart and taken out and, you know, fragmented and mutilated. But what we want to say basically is that the knowledge was mutilated for you to not understand what they're saying. So they didn't give the connectedness, and they didn't give the juice. They gave you just a skeleton.
It's a guidebook. It's not necessarily, you know, the owner's manual.
Well, yeah, but when you go to, you know, to the Old Testament, there's a part in the Old Testament that talks about Jacob that went in one of his traveling.
Oh, this is cool.
And then he went down and just went sleep. When he went to sleep in this place, he put a rock as a pillow, and then he had a dream. And the dream was that he was in this place where there was this huge stairway and angels going back and forth, up and down.
Jacob's ladder.
And then he talked to God, and God said, well, this is the gate of God. And then he woke up and said, wow, this is incredible. This is actually, the house of God. And going back and forth, you know, I went to the gates of heaven, and I didn't even know. So he named this place Bethel, which Beth means house in Hebrew, and ancient Hebrew, and El means God. So it's the house of God. So you go back to Betelgeuse. You have Bethel, which is the house of God, and Gauss, that was, you know, through history and through times, you know, this star was well known, but, it, you know, the pronunciation got corrupted, and, you know, some of the new interpretations of the ancient text said Betelgeuse in itself, Bethel, and Gauss being actually house. So Betelgeuse is one of the really cool, awesome, fearsome gateways or stargates for us.
Well, by itself, it represents the Hindu moon mansion.
Yeah, one of the fourth moon mansion, which is a big deal for the Hindus. It's a big deal. And her temperament, you know, the emanation, because it's an elder star, the emanation that comes from her is very intense, but it's of pure, unconditional love. So Betelgeuse, you know, esoterically influenced our solar system, vibrating to from herself, her rays, again, and, you know, mixing with the sun rays of our sun, and then coming down through us, you know, working the way through those waves of shifting and replacing the energy of greed, evil, and, you know, I would say... you know, the words are really not good for me tonight. The energies that are in dissonance.
The energies of the ego.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about cosmic now.
Oh.
You know, the dissonance energy of, you know, the harmonic cosmos to be eliminated and, you know, and put apart and get away from what we intend to do. So the influence of Betelgeuse is very important and very intense.
Well, it was one of the stars specifically mentioned, for those of you who know the Master Dwar school, the Ascended Master. He specifically mentions Betelgeuse and talks about the potent forces that come from the star.
So, with the assistance of those three, I would say, I will use here, the three higher beings, the stellar beings of Formaliot, of Betelgeuse, and of Merca on a constellation of
Pegasus,
we are able finally to go through a very important step in our life journey, which is the facing of the second dweller of the threshold. The first dweller of the threshold, we did the process of attunement, and I would say the showdown during the initiation
for Lyra.
For Lyra constellation. And now we're going to face, but the second of the threshold, the first well in the threshold, we face the lower aspects of our ego on the astral plane. And this now, it's a second phase where you're going to face the same aspects of the lower self now in the mental plane. And why this is so important? Because as we are, and our, you know, prescribed in our matrix, ingrained in our genes to be co-creators of the universe, not God, co-creators, like every other star beings, they are co-creators. They are not to grow, to replace God. As is ingrained in our beings, and our former creation is from our thought. So in order for you to reach another stage, you need to purify your thoughts. You need to eliminate all the old belief systems and all the thought forms that were gathered, and they're dusting and they're pulling you down with the laws. It's the same way that the law of gravity, you know, heavier you have a object, more difficult it is to fly. And this is the second, element of purification when you face the second dweller. Now, how we face the first dweller by ourselves, you know, and it was really a pretty scary, intense thing. The second dweller is the one that holds the gateway out of Earth. Meaning, when I say the gateway out of Earth, I'm meaning the gateway out of the wheel of reincarnation. But you won't face that by yourself. Through the energy of those three stars integrated in your Antakarana, you will be able to attune your energy enough to have a straight contact with your angel of the presence. It does need a lot of work. Yes, it does. It's going to happen overnight. No, it won't. We go give you...
We're giving you the tools to do it.
The tools, and it will be another instrument in your toolbox, but you will be able to do it. It is a well worth it experience, and I will tell you why. Because 1 minute of contact, or even 1 minute of contemplation, of gazing upon your angel of the presence,
or this also known as the solar angel,
your solar angel, it's worth thousands of reincarnations. So 1 minute that you can consciously aware and self-realize, gather this contact with him or her, you know, is worth more than thousands of lifetime of purification. The angel of the presence is the one that facilitates your assistance, and he takes care of absolutely everything. It can be more or less the guardian angel, as we have in common sense, but it's much more than that. This angel made the ultimate sacrifice instead of continuation of their own. Each one of us would assign one. Instead of continuation of their own development, they get to renounce this for enormous period of time in order to facilitate us to incarnate really the consciousness of the higher humans, level 3 and 4, to be, you know, proceeding and living our ultimate goal that we were created for. So the solar angel is known as the diamond being. It's incredible, indestructible, and we are, you know, ultimately, he is the lower reflection of the image of God. So when you say, I saw God face to face, it's more likely you saw your divine angel, which is a reflection of God, broken down the same way we said before.
To where you can see it.
You can see it, and you can assimilate his energy, because the energy of the Mother, Father is so big. So he's a mirror of reflection of that. So it's absolutely a must to work towards, you know, the contact with your solar angel. And from the contact of the solar angel, you gather the straight contact with your family of light. I mean, contact we always have with them. But the difficult thing
conscious
is to remember.
Contact.
Conscious and absolutely interactive contact with them. And you can sit in your Council of 12, your own Council of 12. Not the Council of 12 of the Earth, but your own Council of 12. This is important. This is one of the, you know, and people think, according to Blavatsky, 849 very dedicated lifetimes to get to this point. And now, you know, finally, in the stage that we are in the age of Aquarius, all the secrets and all the, I would say, the
acceleration that's happened as far as being able to raise our vibration level.
So all the arcs of knowledge are being opened again to mankind to facilitate this. So this is an absolutely important step for our own beings. It's a very powerful, intense attunement and initiation. It will need dedication and work. It's not for the fainted of heart. It's not for somebody that just wanted to do this one time and, you know, because once you enter in the spiritual path and you start doing those things, you need to continue. And you don't need necessarily to continue with us, but the process of, you know, self-perfection needs to be done.
Yeah, we're not trying to scare you here, but the spiritual path is something that needs to be done and followed on a regular basis. And we're looking, you know, we're looking for serious people. We, you know, this isn't a weekend thing. This isn't a come do it. We give you a, you know, it's like Reiki, getting attuned for Reiki, which is incredible. I love Reiki, you know. But you could go there and learn the techniques, and then, you know, a lot of people say, well, okay, I'm a master. I took a weekend course. Well, that's great. Mastership really is a lifetime's path. And the stellar codes, what we're giving you is the tools. Think of that as the weekend course. But to really reap the benefits and to do this, it's something that you're going to have to integrate into your life and continue to practice and grow to do, because your enlightenment is only something that you can give yourself. Nobody can give that to you. It's something that you have to prepare for and open yourself and do yourself. But
we're running out of time, but look, just complimenting what Chris said. So why we want to be enlightened? Why do we want to be enlightened? We want to be enlightened. You know, you can ask yourself, why bother? You know, it's like, I'm going to get there. It doesn't matter what I do. By the sheer wave of evolution, one day I will get there. Yes, but as fast as you go and as more, diligent in your own health, it will, it's different. It's not just another drop in the ocean. This drop is unique. You are one incredible note that is missing on the symphony of the universe. You enlighten yourself. You will be able to be part of something much bigger than our own consciousness is able to, wrap around, our head around it. It's something that is just a beginning of an incredible and eternal journey to perfection, an eternal journey of communion with, Mother, Father, God, and all His created beings, and inside of what's most precious for all of us, which is the pure vibration of Christ consciousness.
We're really blessed to be living at this particular time with all the problems that are out there and with all the things going on. This particular time, we have this opportunity to connect with and raise our vibration and become, put ourselves in synchrony with the Christ consciousness and really
be the hands, be the hands. So why be enlightened? Absolutely, I think, should be the highest goal that anyone can really intend or any intention that one should be, that this is a eternal goal for any being, self-realized. A lot of people get enlightened and leave Earth. Others make another vow to stay back.
Like the Bodhisattvas.
To guarantee that nobody gets forgotten in this process. But they are self-realized beings. They are out of the wheel of karma. Sometimes they come back to the wheel of karma, not to contract more karma, but to intercede in certain areas and being some teachings, or even just anchoring light, which is an incredible, absolutely incredible, painful but necessary job.
And
being in the place of anchoring light. That's what we call the lighthouses. But anyhow.
All right. What we're any last quick question, whatever, as far as the stellar code that you want to touch base, or I'm going to open it up to questions and answers.
Well, what I want to say basically is I had a lot of other things to say.
Well, I know we could keep talking for
hours.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. And I'm getting very enthusiastic about this because I really love this. And I even love more is the attunements in itself. I really do. What I wanted to say that this is not, there are many paths. This is not something that's the only path.
Yeah,
it is not the only path.
This isn't exclusive. This is a path. And it will resonate with some people, and other paths will resonate with other people.
This is basically what you call, basically in Hindu tradition, this will be a facet of Jnana Yoga, which is the conquering of an enlightenment path through study and internal work. So it is not, but it's the conscious one, not by the path of the mystic, just with devotion and rituals, but the path of the study and amplifying your level of consciousness or your circle, amplifying your level or circle of reality through study and through attunement. So it's one of the paths. There are many, many paths. There are many, many paths. This is not the answer for everybody. There will be people that will be more attracted to this path. Others will be attracted to other paths. But one thing I just want to reinstate here, enlightenment does not occur by mistake. Enlightenment does not occur instantaneously and out of nothing. You may, you know, you may have some Kundalini awakening by accident, like some people have Kundalini awakening after a trauma, an accident, or something like this. But the process of raising from the awakening up is a completely different process. So enlightenment, you had Kundalini awakening, doesn't mean that you're enlightened. It means that you are on the path of spiritual practice, but it doesn't mean that you are completely awake. So enlightenment does not happen as an accident. You had a car accident, or you just woke up in the morning, brushed your teeth, and said, "I am enlightened." That ain't gonna happen. And it's not, because we are saying, if you go to any serious state of, you know, school of knowledge, any serious school of knowledge, and there are many very reliable out there. I want to just reinforce this. There are many paths to God. Just some takes longer than others, and it depends a lot on the diligence of the student. But none of them will tell you that just do what you do and expect different results, because it's not the truth. So this is basically just what I want to say.
Okay. So in summary, the Stellar Codes is not the only path to enlightenment or to raising your vibration. It's just a really cool one. Okay. Now, what we'll do is I'm going to go ahead and open this up to conversation mode. If you don't want to ask a question, we ask that you will hit *6, which will mute your phone, particularly if you're in a noisy environment, but everybody else will be in conversation mode, so you will be able to ask questions, and we hopefully will be able to answer them for you. So just a second, bear with me, and let me switch over the teleconference.